Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, just to give you all a little update on this weekend show. Because Shad and I were at the New Orleans Investment Conference Wednesday through Saturday, we were busy meeting with some of the speakers, a lot of the exhibitors and companies that were there. We did not have time to record any additional segments, so we are replaying a couple of the segments that we posted earlier this week. You can listen to these full interviews on our website and podcast on the day we posted them, as well as on the updated weekend show posting. I hope you all enjoy this weekend show. We will be back full time next week, kicking it off, covering these markets that unfortunately ended this week really on their back foot. We're kicking off this show with a replay of Dana Lyons' conversation, really outlining his bear market playbook for investors. I hope you all enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Kicking off this shortened trading week, we are chatting with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago. Just as a note, this interview will most likely be replayed on our weekend show. As I think you all know, we will be at the New Orleans Investment Conference. So later part of this week, we will be a little bit less so with the daily editorials. Dana, I want to take more of a big picture look at these markets because, quite frankly, we've been having you on this whole year and you've been sharing with us what your internal models have been saying, and you've very much been playing off this bear market playbook where sell the rips, not so much buy the dips. This whole year, the first three quarters have been down, down, down. Even the start of the fourth quarter, well, it looked promising in the first couple trading days. Again, it's kind of bringing up the fact that we might be in for some lower lows as we progress through this last quarter. Dana, give us a big picture outlook here. What's your takeaway from these first three quarters and what it means for Q4 and then even 2023, please?
Sure, Corey. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way. You know, our thought has been the same, you know, since we started chatting early on in the year. You know, we had the breath warnings in the fourth quarter of 2021 that where breath started falling off the table, indicating, okay, any further price increases in the indices may not be sustainable. And indeed, we saw prices top out very early on in the year. And the fact that breath and some of the broader indices continue to fall off the table gave us a heads up that, okay, maybe the market regime was changing from the constant bull market that we've been in, one where, okay, pretty much every dip is to be bought, to a bear market regime. Because there have been, talked about in the past, many background indicators, whether it's valuation or the household investment market, many metrics that had gone to stratospheric levels, really extreme, really unprecedented levels, that once we did hit a bear market, there was a ton of risk embedded in the market that if it comes off, then the market certainly could be in terrible shape. And with that start of the bear market that we thought was occurring early on in the year, we did indeed have to shift to a different playbook, which was, okay, instead of buying every dip, time to take some risk off the table into rallies or even hedge yourself into rallies. And pretty much the rest of the year so far, or the first three quarters, have run pretty much according to that playbook. And at this point, you look at those background indicators, we have not even taken that much of that embedded or potential risk off the table. So at this point, despite some of the fits and starts, you know, the post-June rally, which all the bear market rally, as well as the first couple of days of the quarter last week, which everyone got really excited about, nothing within those rallies gave us any evidence, according to our analysis, that, okay, this bear market's run its course, and we're due to start a new bull market. In fact, there's plenty of risk still on the table. So still operating from that bear market playbook, which means, especially in the moves like we saw to begin last week, we want to be taking some risk off the table, get defensive, and even at this point, testing, you know, those prior lows. If we do crack those lows, which we think we will, there's a lot of risk still left to come out of the market. So if you have not de-risked, if you have not, you know, taken protective measures on your portfolio, it's not too late to at least save some bucks.
Well, Dana, I think that's such a solid point to have made, that if there is the potential of breaking below the June lows and really having another leg down, it's not too late for people to either A, put on a hedge, or B, at least de-risk and take some profits off the table if they have them, or at least reduce their position and increase their cash position. One of the things we had talked about before we started recording was how the speed of information and the speed of dissemination of data is so much faster now than it used to be. I mean, it used to be people were trading off the stock quotes they got in the newspaper, or maybe watching the tickers roll across the TV. But things took a while to come out to the market. And sometimes people would put out an internal letter to their shareholders, but that would take a long time to circulate. Now everything is instant. And so, to your point, when we've seen a couple of these counter trend moves and relief rallies, everybody jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, look, it's a new bull market. And here's why. I'd love you to expand on how you're looking at that kind of data when it gets released, even if it's some good data from the past, just how that maybe doesn't play out the way everybody thinks it's going to play out.
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. And, you know, we used to be, me in particular, I used to take part in a lot. I used to contribute a lot of those types of studies when, you know, FinTwit and financial social media started becoming a thing, really, you know, about probably about a decade ago. Because I'm, you know, we're stats guys, we're quant guys. There's a lot to be gleaned about analyzing the market when you analyze stats and historical precedents and similar types of periods from statistical vantage point, how that's worked going forward. So we used to do a ton of those studies. I used to share a lot of it on Twitter, stock twits, a lot of social media sites. And really, you know, it was helpful data. It was I thought the research was helpful, even if it didn't feed into any of our models or decision making. I thought it was helpful. It was also good marketing for us. As the decade went along, I think a couple things have transpired over the years. One, used to be that only a select or a small percentage of people had access to a database of data and market information where they could do those types of studies, historical studies. Whereas now everyone has information, everyone has access to that type of data. Everyone's got an Excel spreadsheet that can do studies like that. The second thing is, like you mentioned, the dissemination of information. Back in the day, yeah, you might put something out to your clients. You might put something out on a newsletter, something to that effect, or just internally among your own, maybe your own firm, your own trading partners, that gave you an edge, where you had that, you only had that data, you could only act on it. Nobody else knew the those types of studies that you're looking at. Now you put out one study on Twitter, and like you said, it might be very compelling, might be very intriguing. Now it's a different story, because as soon as you put it out there with the internet, with dissemination, instantaneous dissemination of information, everyone has it instantaneous. Everyone knows the results. Everyone is able to trade on that same information. As a side note, it's also kind of sad that you see someone puts out an original study. You see that study parroted about a dozen times over the next 24, 48 hours. Everyone tends to steal other people's work now, but that's just a sidebar. But the point is, with the dissemination of information instantaneously, everybody knows that same information, which means where it used to be an edge for you or a select few traders, money managers around the world, now everybody has the same information. So the edge disappears, basically. So we saw that last week, a couple studies looking at those first 2 days of October, for example, were up so much that, you know, I don't know, I don't have a specific study, but there are a couple of them that pointed to the fact that, okay, those two consecutive days like that have always led to further gains going forward over the next couple months or 6 months or a year. So everyone jumped on, was quick to jump on the bullish bandwagon and pour back into the market where, you know, predictably, you saw the rug pulled out from under them to end the week. So I would just, my point in this whole thing would just to caution people against putting too much stock, no pun intended, into those types of studies, those type of, okay, unprecedented studies in this day and age of information dissemination, because where they might have, the reason they worked in the past was because it wasn't ubiquitous knowledge, you know, it was only a select few people had that edge. Now that everyone has that same information instantaneously, that edge disappears. So we've seen a couple of those instances with the June rally and last week where some of those types of moves, it was suggested, never led to, okay, losses going forward. They always led to a new bull market. And those things have already now turned into unprecedented losses. So I would caution folks against putting all their eggs in that basket and thinking these just because it's unprecedented up to now that it can't, you know, fail going forward, because we've already seen it. And for those reasons I mentioned, that's why it's more likely to fail now. So yeah, it's a very good point to make in this day and age. It as compelling as the studies might be, I would caution people against putting too much stock into that type of analysis.
Dana, is the biggest problem here the fact that we're in a bear market, a prolonged bear market, although not necessarily by historic standards, just prolonged in terms of the flash crash bear markets we've gotten in the last decade or two, and everybody wanting to be bullish? It doesn't really matter what sector you're in. People do want some validation for why they hold whatever sector of stocks they are holding. So then they try to find some historical references that point to more bullish outcomes. Is that what we really just need to be worried about? Is everyone trying to be bullish, so they're trying to nitpick their information?
Yeah, and maybe a lot of it is the fact that a lot of people, a lot of market participants, especially social media, financial social media participants, never really experienced a real bear market, a secular bear market, a long-term bear market, you know. So a lot of their studies, a lot of their bias, a lot of the recency bias plays into their, whether it's a conscious or subconscious bullish bias. So especially, you know, after the downside that we've seen so far this year, of course, it's human nature for folks to want to, you know, try to pick a bottom, try to be look like a genius and pick those lows and anticipate that kind of a reversal, especially if they have not experienced one of those long-term, you know, grinded out type of bear markets that, you know, we haven't seen in a while. We haven't seen in at least, you know, since the financial crisis and then the post 2000 pop before that. And then, you know, even longer term bear markets like we saw from the 60s to early 80s that kind of just grinded and wore people down, wore investors down. It went sideways for the most part, but it wore people down, wore investors down that just kept trying to pick bottoms and never. The market was never able to get any momentum going to the upside so they could make their money back. And the interesting thing is if you look at investment, household investment in stocks, if they before this current cycle, back in the 60s, the household investment popped in 1966. from 66 to the early 80s, you basically saw a sideways market. But the amount of money invested by households in the market kept going lower and lower and lower because investors kept picking bottoms like they are now, and they kept getting the rug pulled out from under. Rather than, you know, okay, de-risking, putting on some protection early on and waiting it out, basically they kept trying to pick bottoms, and they kept failing. So by the early part of the 1980s, it had worn them out and discouraged investors so much that even though prices were about the same, they'd gone sideways for 16 years or so, household investment was at an all-time low because it just got tired of getting the rug pulled out from under them. And that's the type of environment, those are the type of conditions that can be in place to put, you know, to engineer a new bull market. And we're nowhere near that. I think the same philosophy is going on now to where, you know, if we're in a bear market, we're only 9 months in, and folks are still trying to pick the bottom. There has been selectively some good hedging activity going on, and there's been some bad sentiment. But I think by and large, people, like you mentioned, a lot of studies come out are pointing to attempts to pick bottoms. So I think these long-term types of grinded-out bear markets are especially bad because people do keep trying to pick these bottoms instead of, okay, taking the opportunity into rallies like the post-June rally into August to take some risk off their portfolio. In fact, instead, they're looking for reasons to get long again. So the absence of or the fact that investors have been so reluctant to change their playbook from a bull market playbook to a bear market playbook just kind of extends and prolongs that longer term bear market that I think is still has a long way to go. And that's the type of market we've talked about in the past, that the one that just grinds you down. Grinds investors down. It doesn't give you that shock value like maybe a COVID crash that scares you out of the market. It just grinds you lower, 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 slowly, and doesn't scare you out of the market. You just keep trying to find a bottom, and you end up hurting yourself more and more. And my concern is that we're going to look at this thing a couple of years down the road, and we're going to be much lower, and there's going to be folks that, you know, never took that opportunity to take some risk out of their portfolio and kept trying to pick bottoms, and they'll be much worse for it, worse off than if they had just sat there with their money and tried to ride it out. They're going to be awful, you know, really bad off then, but even worse off trying to continue to buy into every dip that comes along.
Well, Dana, like the saying goes, corrective moves in bear markets either wear you out or scare you out. And I think people got used to those scare you out ones where they were flash crashes down with a V-shaped recovery. And they're just not used to the wear you out one, and they're not used to a real bull market that certainly lasts longer than 9 months. And most bull markets last, you know, can last years. To your point, we could be several years from now looking at this period of time and how much further it still could pull back. I guess just for your process, I know you look at the quantitative data and your models, but what would have you change your tune as far as what will you be looking for when you feel like, hey, this is maybe more of a buy and hold longer term opportunity versus just the trading opportunities we've seen over the last 9 months?
From a shorter term perspective, maybe a cyclical basis, true capitulation would have us take a more aggressive stance, even if it's if you look at in the 2000 to 2002 bear market, you know, you had some capitulatory moves along the way or conditions along the way where you get some decent intermediate term rallies. Same thing in the during the financial crisis to some extent. So I'd rather see some good capitulatory conditions to give us more confidence to be aggressive, at least for a short term, more sustainable bounce. But in the longer term, it's going to take really corrective, a lot more corrective action in those background indicators that I talked about, stuff like valuation, which is just a little off of the all-time highs. That's got a long way to go before it really corrects sufficiently. And the same thing with something like household investment. We're only like 2 quarters off of the all-time highs. So for us to be confident that we're putting a long-term secular bull market or at least approaching conditions that make it possible for a long-term secular bull market bottom to be put in place, those longer-term metrics have to be worked off. And we're closer to the start of that than we are to the end. You know, the great Bob Farrell from Merrill Lynch, one of his 10 rules of investing is, and this is has echoes of certainly Isaac Newton's laws of physics. When markets that go to extremes in one direction always go to extremes in the other direction. And the idea that or the fact that many of these longer term, what we call background metrics, have gone to such extremes to the upside. If those rules are applicable to financial markets, which they have always been, they need to go to extreme to the downside. And if they're going to do that, it's going to be just almost a devastating crash of, on the order of 80% or so. Or it's going to take more likely a long, long drawn out type of bear market, many, many years that eventually puts us, puts the markets into condition where, basically people have given up, valuations gone to the downside extreme, investors pulled their money out of the markets, and those types of background metrics have put the market condition in a place where you can start a long-term bull market. So we are probably many years off from that, which is, I know, discouraging to say, it's discouraging to hear. But that's just, not going to sugarcoat anything at this point. There is a lot of time probably left in this bear market, which means there's a lot of time for investors to seek some sort of, protective measures on their portfolio or seek, help from, risk managers, managers that actually have been through bear markets, have managed risk like this with throughout a bear market. It's not, if we are closer to the beginning than the end, there's certainly a lot of time left for investors to seek that type of help, that type of assistance out with their investment program. And that would be, I guess, my main recommendation for investors listening is that, if we do, which we think we do, if we do have many years of long-term, a long time left to go within this bear market, it's not too late to find help, to seek help, whether it's a strategy or actually a manager to assist you with, de-risking your portfolios and trying to navigate through that type of environment, because it's going to be very, very painful, and probably one that's, precedent that many investors these days have never experienced that type of a bear.
Well, Dana, we had a bull market for well over a decade, right? And now that we've switched into a bear market, man, oh man, what you're outlining sounds like it could be still quite painful for investors, but that's why it's important to understand the type of market we're in, the type of playbook that you have. Dana, I appreciate you taking kind of a bigger, broader look at these markets and sharing how you continue to play these markets. Maybe we'll get a change in course, but it still seems like this bear market is fully holding the markets and investors down. Dana, thank you as always for your time, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your week. We'll chat again in another couple weeks.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.